Dermatology Snapshots, July 2022. Paper 1. Real-life impact of immunologic tests to predict relapse after treatment cessation in patients with bullous pemphigoid. A French multicenter retrospective study. Battisai, Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. Why we chose this paper. When bullous pemphigoid is diagnosed, anti-BP180 is detected in 72 to 94% of patients' serum and correlates with disease severity. High levels of anti-BP180 on ELISA and a persistent positive direct immunofluorescence are reported to predict relapse after treatment cessation. But how this translates to real-life decision-making is unclear. Study aim and design. A retrospective 10-centre study of 238 patients where the treatment cessation decision was classified as Group A, in accordance with the immunological tests, Group B, despite the immunological tests, and Group C, without immunological tests being performed. Treatment was for an average of 11 months and included clobetasol propionate, 93%, oral corticosteroids, 6%, and steroid-sparing agents, including methotrexate and doxycycline, 32%. What were the main findings? Relapse rate at 3 months was approximately 15% in patients with treatment cessation in accordance with the immunological tests, 24% in patients with treatment cessation despite immunological tests, and 14% where immunological tests were not performed. The rates at 6 months were 19%, 29%, and 19%, respectively. However, there was no statistically significant difference between the groups, including when B and C were combined compared with A. Limitations: is it applicable? This was a retrospective study and follow-up was short. A lower proportion received oral steroids than would be likely to have been the case in the UK. The authors suggest statistical significance was not met due to Group B being too small. What's the take-home message? Treatment cessation based on results of immunological tests does not seem to lower relapse rates in bullous pemphigoid compared to standard clinical decision making. Paper 2. Comparison of permethrin-based treatment strategies against scabies in infants and young children. Reibenbauer, Journal of Paediatrics. Why we chose this paper. Permethrin 5% is one of the main treatments for scabies, but persistent infestation after completing the recommended course is not uncommon. Scabies is especially common in children, in particular in the under 2s, and may present differently to adults. Study aim and design. A retrospective cohort study of 83 children aged less than 4 years with scabies confirmed by skin scraping microscopy or dermoscopy, plus or minus clinical features, itch, or known positive contact. Cure was clinically assessed at 2 to 4 weeks. Three regimens were compared: A, the standard BNF recommended application all over on days 1 and 8, B, extended application on days 1, 8, 15, and C, an intensified regimen, as for B, plus additional application to hands and feet on days 2, 3, 4, 9, 10, and 11. What were the main findings? The intensified regimen, C, resulted in 73.5% cure versus only 44% with the standard day 1 and 8 regime, A, and 53.8% with the extended day 1, 8, 15 regimen, B. Limitations: is it applicable? The study was not randomised and decisions as to which regimen to use were determined by the clinician. We speculate they may have given the more intensive regimen to more heavily infected infants, and as such, the true benefit of this regimen may be even more pronounced across the board. What's the take-home message? Treatment failure may be avoided by using an intensified regimen in young children, which targets the highly infested palmoplantar sites. Paper 3. Adjuvant radiotherapy may not significantly change outcomes in high-risk cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma with clear surgical margins. A systematic review and meta-analysis. Kim et al., Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. Why we chose this paper. The role of adjuvant radiotherapy in margin-clear, high-risk cutaneous SCC is uncertain. BAD guidelines suggest consideration of adjuvant radiotherapy where there is symptomatic perineural invasion, but no firm guidance exists on this topic. Study aim and design. A systematic review was conducted. Inclusion criteria were studies with at least 5 patients with SCC that reported at least one outcome of interest: local recurrence, metastasis, or disease-specific death in high-risk cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma. What was the main findings? 33 studies with data on 3,867 high-risk cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma met the inclusion criteria. There were no statistically significant differences in poor outcomes between surgery versus surgery with adjuvant radiotherapy, despite all risks being low with the adjuvant radiotherapy, e.g. estimates for local recurrence for the surgery alone group versus the surgery with adjuvant radiotherapy were 15.2%, 95% confidence interval, 6.3 to 27%, versus 8.8, 95% confidence interval, 1.6 to 20.9%. For regional metastasis, 11.5, 95% confidence interval, 7.2 to 16.7, versus 4.4, 95% confidence interval, 0% to 18%. Limitations: is it applicable? Most of the included studies were retrospective. Controls for covariates could not be done, and there was limited information on the type of adjuvant radiotherapy used. What's the take-home message? Although this study demonstrated no difference in outcomes for surgery versus surgery with adjuvant radiotherapy in those with margin-clear high-risk squamous cell carcinoma, the lack of high-quality studies included in this meta-analysis and several other limitations means that we could take these results with a pinch of salt. We really need well-designed, randomized controlled trials to help determine the benefit of adjuvant radiotherapy in high-risk squamous cell carcinoma. On the topic of squamous cell carcinoma, Paper 4. Risk of invasive cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma after different treatments for actinic keratosis, a secondary analysis of a randomized clinical trial, JAMA Dermatology. In JAMA Dermatology, a secondary analysis of a randomized clinical trial from the Netherlands was recently published. From the same dataset as the 2019 Janssen New England Journal of Medicine publication. The key finding was that Olsen grade 3 actinic keratosis, thick hyperkeratotic actinic keratosis, increased the risk of squamous cell carcinoma developing in that field, which supports the widely held view that hypertrophic actinic keratosis may have a higher risk of squamous cell carcinoma and should be treated. The authors also found the risk of squamous cell carcinoma was higher where additional treatment was needed, likely supporting the general consensus that treatment-resistant areas should be treated with suspicion. Paper 5. Pausing methotrexate improves immunogenicity of COVID-19 vaccination in elderly patients with rheumatic diseases. De Silva et al., Annals of the Rheumatology Diseases. There have been a few studies suggesting that methotrexate may reduce the immune response to COVID-19 vaccination. In this retrospective study, neutralizing SARS-CoV antibodies were measured after second vaccination in 64 patients on methotrexate therapy, 31 of whom temporarily paused medication without a fixed regimen. The control group consisted of 21 patients with autoimmune rheumatic diseases without immunosuppressive medication. The authors found that methotrexate reduces the immunogenicity of the COVID-19 vaccination in an age-dependent manner, and that holding methotrexate for at least 10 days after vaccination significantly improves the antibody response in patients over 60 years of age. As the evidence for this increases, it may be time to start recommending a pause in treatment for our patients. Paper 6. Clinico-prognostic implications of head and neck involvement by mycosis fungoides, a retrospective cohort study. Young et al., Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. Why we chose this paper. Mycosis fungoides is a heterogeneous disease, and identifying those with a higher risk of progression is key. Study aim and design. A retrospective study at a Korean centre. Cases of mycosis fungoides with and without head and neck involvement were compared. What were the main findings? 39 patients had mycosis fungoides with head and neck involvement, 85 without. In early stage mycosis fungoides, 1A to 2A, head and neck involvement at diagnosis was associated with poor prognosis in terms of overall survival and progression-free survival. Patients with head and neck involvement had more advanced T stage, T2 to T4, than those without head and neck involvement. 33 out of 39, 84.6%, versus 23 out of 85, 27.1%. They also had a higher frequency of lymph node involvement at diagnosis, 12 out of 39, 30.8%, versus 2 out of 85, 2.4%, p less than 0.001. Follicular trophism was more common in those with head and neck involvement, p equals 0.027. The mean age at diagnosis of those with head and neck involvement, 48.9 years, was significantly higher than those without, 38.8 years. Limitations, is it applicable? Retrospective designs limit quality of study, small numbers overall and a single centre. What's the take-home message? Head and neck involvement in patients with mycosis fungoides seems to confer a worse prognosis. Whilst further studies are needed, closer follow-up of these patients should be considered. Paper 7. Treatments and outcomes of generalised pustular psoriasis. A cohort of 1,516 patients in a nationwide inpatient database in Japan. Miyachi et al., Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology, summarised by Dr. Sesmi. Why we chose this paper? Given the rarity of generalised pustular psoriasis, evidence for treatment choice has been largely based on low-quality small studies. Study aim and design. National retrospective cohort study, including 1,516 hospitalised patients with generalised pustular psoriasis, identified through a database in Japan. Outcomes were observed from patients in three treatment groups: biologics, oral agents without biologics, and systematic steroids only. What were the main findings? Overall mortality rate was 4.2%, with 3.3% requiring ITU admission. In-hospital mortality was lower in the biologics group versus the oral agents and steroids-only group, 1% versus 3.7% versus 9.1% respectively, p less than 0.001. Additionally, in the biologics group, morbidity was lower. There were fewer respiratory complications and the discharge rates were higher. Notably, the demographic of the biologics group was younger, 57 versus 68 versus 68, p less than 0.01, and they had fewer comorbidities. Limitations, is it applicable? Patients' disease severity, previous treatments and topical treatments were not considered. As a retrospective observational study, groups were not randomised and had different demographics, limiting the conclusions drawn from this study. Only hospitalised patients were included. What's the take-home message? In hospitalised patients with generalised pustular psoriasis, there may be an association between biologics treatment and reduced mortality and morbidity. Paper 8, Important Update. National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. Abrocitinib, tralokinumab and upadacitinib for treatment of moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. Currently, patients not responding to topicals and at least one systemic therapy, e.g. methotrexate or cyclosporin, may progress to targeted therapies, dupilumab, anti-IL-4 and 13, and baricitinib, JAK1 and 2 inhibitor. Phototherapy may be considered prior to systemics, but trying it is not a requirement for progression. NICE have acknowledged the unmet need for further treatment options for severe eczema. In June, NICE released its appraisal document recommending three new treatment options for moderate to severe eczema in adults. Abrocitinib and upadacitinib are also recommended in children aged 12 and over. All three are currently available through a commercial arrangement. The clinical trial evidence shows that all three reduce symptoms of atopic dermatitis compared with placebo. Abrocitinib and upadacitinib were indirectly compared with cyclosporin, but the appraisal committee concluded results were highly uncertain. All three were also indirectly compared with dupilumab and baricitinib, but again the results were uncertain. However, cost-effectiveness estimates are within what NICE considers acceptable use in NHS resources. Price of treatment per month is fairly similar between the three options, working about the same as baricitinib and about half the price of dupilumab, according to BNF pricing information. In terms of sequencing, these three new treatments may now be considered after systemic immunosuppressant failure or intolerance, alongside dupilumab and baricitinib. Concomitant topical therapies will usually be proposed. As with dupilumab, an easy 50% reduction at 16 weeks or a 4-point reduction of DLQI is required for continuation. Paper 9. Inhibition of tumour necrosis factor improves conventional steroid therapy for Stevens-Johnson syndrome, toxic epidermal necrolysis in a cohort of patients. AO et al., Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. There is limiting and conflicting data on treatments for TNSJS. In this recent cohort study of 25 patients with SJS/TEN, 10 patients received methylprednisolone and 15 patients received etanercept plus methylprednisolone. Serum levels of various inflammatory markers were measured. The authors found that the combination therapy significantly shortened the course of the initial steroid treatment and the duration of the acute phase, hospitalisation and skin re-epithelialisation. Although both therapies significantly reduced IL-15 levels, the combination therapy also decreased IL-6 and IL-18 levels. This is one of several recent studies to suggest that etanercept may be a beneficial treatment for SJS/TEN. Although we need more evidence, given the limited treatment options, we should increasingly consider etanercept for this life-threatening disease.